Hi, and welcome to the Morbid Anatomy Transmission. I'm your host, Molly McBride Jacobson. Elise Carter is a kind, cool lady in cat-eyed glasses who works as an editor and shares my alma mater, Barnard College. The Lady I, on the other hand, is a badass professional sword swallower, among other types of sideshow acts. Just a word of warning, I had some technical difficulties recording, so the audio quality on this episode is less than stellar, to say the least. Just close your eyes, sip some coffee, and imagine you're sitting with us outside some cafe in the West 70s learning how to thrust a blade into your gullet.
Honestly, it's a weird mix of things. It used to just be my first initial, and then my first act was the Pirate Sisters, so I changed it to the Nautical A-Y-E. But also, I sort of took it from one of my favorite Preston Surge's movies, which was The Lady Eve.
Yeah, and do you think of that as, like, a separate person from yourself?
I did when I started. Yeah. I was really weird about it. I called it Three Faces of I, because I was like, those are her shoes and her dresses. And I used to be very, very particular about keeping the two, not letting people know my real name. Mm.
And mysterious.
Yeah. And I still, to this day, I don't like it when audience members, unless I know them, unless you genuinely do know me, okay, Don't call me Elise. Well, I had always been interested since I was a little kid. I grew up here in Manhattan. And I always joke, like, we didn't have state fairs in Manhattan. And I did get to see it. The first place I ever saw fire eating, I saw Penn and Teller off Broadway in the mid-80s as a little kid. I was already, like, punk rock, or I thought I was, and it seemed like the most punk rock, far out thing in the world. So I became interested in sideshows and freak shows. I'm a very typical, if such a thing exists, Morbid Anatomy member, because I'm like, oh, is there a dark side to this? Because then I want to know about it. But eventually I ended up promoting music, and that wasn't really going all that well, but through that, I met this woman, and we were randomly talking one day, and I was like, you know, I kind of always wanted to go to the Coney Island sideshow school, but I could never get enough money for it. It's a great education. It's just expensive. And that woman's name is A.V. Fives, and she's an illustrator and an artist. And she was just like, oh, don't be a sucker. I'm a retired fire eater. I'll teach you. So I learned to eat fire in her living room in Williamsburg, as you do.
In afternoon or, like, over the course of many, many meetings?
The very basics, like, literally just getting the fire into your mouth takes a while. It's so... I always, like, describe the lizardy part of your brain that just... Because, like...
Just don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, evolution is pretty damn clear on that. Like, it's not even a thinky... part of your brain. It's just the, like, keep fire away from your face. So it took me one or two sessions just to get the most basic parts down, and then I always feel like 10 years later I'm still getting better at it.
Really?
Yeah. To get the basic moves is fairly quick. It's like driving, really. Like, you pick up the basics, but then you get subtleties and you get comfortable the more you do it and the more you're around other people do it. Like, I just saw something new. I was like, there's nothing new under the sun. And then I was watching some guy's video and I'm like, oh my god, that's amazing. I have to run out and learn that right now. You know, because I see performers all the time. Like, a lot of burlesque performers pick it up and they only pick up like one or two moves and they're like, I'm a fire eater.
That's really interesting, because one of my questions was, are there different approaches to sword swallowing but also fire eating?
I think there are different levels of competence. There are a lot of people who do fire stuff now, and a lot is real relative to the industry that you're in. It's either, you know, you're like, who are... The second you start doing something, anyone who comes up behind you, you're like, who are these little bastards? And, you know, which is totally unfair and not right. And I think there are certain communities that very much foster fire performance, like Burning Man and some others, and I'm not immensely fond of it because of everybody learning it all the time, because it's an apprentice skill, and, like, I've seen people at it who are amazing, and, like, I just look at, like, the hours that they put into it and getting innovative with it, just really mastering what they're doing. And then I see people who are like, oh, I need another little, especially, I'm going to get emails about this, especially burlesque performers who are like, oh, I need another little doodad. It's not that you don't have a right to do it. If you're going to do something, get really good at it. Sideshow is really, should be, in its best form, really one of the last apprentice skills on Earth. And there's a certain humility in that.
What do you think the tie-in is with burlesque and sideshow?
Well, classically, they've always been related. I mean, there was always, in the history of sideshow, there used to be the cooch tent, which was the girly show. There was a revival in the last 20 years of the vaudeville arts. And so they've always been cousins. They've always been around each other. I actually kind of object when I see a burlesque show that's just nothing but stripping, because I feel like there should always be some kind of variety act in the middle, if nothing else, just because the audience gets, I don't know what your reading on this is, but like my friend Tigger, who's one of the world's great burlesque performers, refers to it as titty coma. You can only see so many gloves come off, so many young, lovely arms before you're like, eh, who cares? And it's that's unfair to the burlesque performers as well. And so classically, burlesque had always had comics, it always had singers, it always had variety acts.
What's your career as a swordswoman?
I'm an independent performer. I do a little bit of everything. I have done corporate speaking with it. Like, I've been to GE and the Gap.
So cool.
And some other, you know, some tech companies. I have done, I've done some TV shows. I was on Gossip Girl and Oddities, like everybody else. You know, I'll do private parties. Yeah. I've done sweet 16s and weddings. And
wow. What, like, can you describe your technique? Like, what physically is happening while you're doing it?
Well, I talk about there are three gag reflexes, and one of them is kind of a misnomer to call it a gag reflex, because what it actually is a bend in your esophagus where your heart is.
Oh my gosh.
So it's me actually pushing my heart out of the way. But you have to get down through all three and drop into the hollow of the stomach.
Really?
Yeah. So, sword swallowing, there's kind of only one way to do it. And the rest is sprinkles. By which I mean, it only works one way. You know, like, there's only one way to swallow a sword. Then you start talking about, like, people swallowing screwdrivers and scissors and saws and curb swords and neon swords. And really, then the skill of it becomes, how are you chatting it up?
Obviously, the excitement of sword swallowing and fire eating is the danger. Have you hurt yourself in the process of learning?
I have dinged my tonsils once as a sword swallower. And I still have my tonsils, and they're really messed up.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of sword swallowing?
No, because I had strep as a kid, like a jillion times.
Is it easier to swallow a sword if you don't have tonsils?
I would imagine.
Will any old blade do, or is there a particular kind of sword that you swallow?
I am a fan of the rapier. It's also your throat is only so wide.
It's very small, yeah.
So I couldn't swallow, you know, a broadsword.
Could men do larger?
Yeah, it's, well, it depends. Yeah, soft. It's very much on your build. There is, I think, one guy who's 7'2" or 7'4", George the Giant. George the Giant.
He can just fit more down there.
He can swallow a longer, broader sword just because he is a very large man.
Yeah. But the rapier is the long, skinny one.
Long, skinny,
right?
Yeah. So that works for me. I have a particular favorite one just because it's like the most comfortable one to swallow. Yeah. You know, it depends on how stretchy you are, like your throat is, and it's just not a skill a lot of people want to pick up. It is actually physically, like, the learning process is pretty physically brutal. It is very uncomfortable. It can be really painful.
Maybe this is a little gross, but do you throw up in the process, or is it like...
In my training, I did not, and actually, I always say that it's not a secret. I'm a recovering bulimic, so it was sort of, for me, also a very strangely positive thing.
Interesting.
Because it was sort of turning something, sticking something down my throat, which had always been an incredible negative since I was a teenager, and turning it into a sort of more positive, empowering aspect of my life.
That's amazing.
And I still, gag reflexes were still intact. That's kind of a myth. I always kid, there's only one joke, and I always get it. I'm like, oh, that's really fresh. You know, like, thank you so much. I actually offered to buy anyone a drink if I hadn't heard the joke before, and I've only had to buy one drink in 8 years.
That's great.
Yeah. So, but it's actually genuinely not that sexy.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, I think people think it's, they're like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and you're like, no, it's really gross. It's
brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, I pull up stomach acid. You know, like, it's really not an attraction. You know, there are very sexy women who do it. They're very sexy women who make it look very cute. It's, as a physical act, not entirely that sexy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So,
what, do you know, what's the history?
In this lecture, I tended to focus more on famous women who've done it.
Oh.
And because they have an interesting history, it's highly traceable. And I think it's a history that's kind of been pushed to the side. It's low culture, and so most people are just not interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was a huge, the sort of modern sideshow, as we think of it, comes out of the Columbian exhibition at the end of the 1800s. And then you start to see tent shows, which is sort of what most people are familiar with. Also around that time, like, you know, pre-TV, pre-movies, Americans went to live shows. They went to vaudeville, and quite a number of vaudeville performers did it. Houdini was a fan of, for example, because sideshow died down a tremendous amount from the mid-20th century until the, you know, the 90s or so. You know, it wasn't something cultural historians were very interested in.
It's clear that, like, this is very old, sort of not extremely well documented, but like, do you think there's anywhere that it can be innovated, or do you think that from here on out it's just going to sort of be kept up as a, you know, fun little bit of nostalgia?
I think the worst thing you can do is try and say, like, there was just that article by that woman who wrote, like, I love the Victorian era so much, and that is the worst thing you can, if you love a culture, do not do that to it. Yeah, try and keep it in amber. I was like, well, die of a preventable disease, you know, you were so annoying. And,
well, it was funny, I was talking about that to someone, and it's like, yeah, I bet you look great in your Victorian house, but then when you have to go to Best Buy, and, you know.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm sure you like tampons and voting and not dying of lockjaw. Like, those things are great. And, you know, it's like, it's not that I don't like a corset on occasion, but give it a rest. And it's also, I'm coming from someone who was very heavily into rockabilly, and I'm just like, yeah, it's like a rent fair with good music.
Yeah.
And so the innovation really comes in the performance. Are you doing something new with it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, you know, and I also think this may be a gross oversimplification, but I think it's such a dude thing. Like, once you bring in tools or weapons,
guys
are like, I will swallow 85 swords that are shot from a cannon, and, like, fireworks, and, you know, and it's like, that's great.
Yeah.
But then it's also, like, at a certain point, like, the audience is just watching you show off. You know, it's not something that should be preserved as people perceived it to be in the olden days. And first of all, the olden days are a moving target anyway, because are you talking about, like, the Middle Ages? Are you talking about ancient Indian shaman? Are you talking about Native Americans? Are you talking about vaudeville? Like, all of these things are, you know, there's so many different time periods. So I have yet to see it go digital, like anyone swallow a GoPro or anything.
Oh.
But
there's an idea.
Yeah, but you could do it, probably.
Yeah, selfie stick.
Yeah. So.
So if people want to learn how to sword swallow, where do they do that?
Not me.
Not
I
you.
Do not teach. Do not email me.
Mm-hmm.
I am turned down, people by the score. You can go to Coney Island.
Uh-huh.
They have a school, and they're wonderful. And you can go to another performer who's great, great guy, by the name of Harley Newman. Or you can find a long-time experienced professional if they're willing to teach you. You cannot learn it off YouTube.
Really?
Don't even bother.
Yeah, I feel like that's a recipe for...
For disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, part of me is, like, thin in the herd, but then part of me is, like... Again, it's also, I've turned down people not just because I don't teach, but also I felt like the reasons for wanting to learn it were wrong. Because it really is a skill that's about entertaining and not just yourself.
Yeah.
And so I worked for 2 years as a fire eater and blockhead and escape artist and bed of nails before, like, I even felt like I had my legs under me to even try it.
Why did sword swallowing stick out as, like, the one that...
Sword swallowing is, first of all, it's sort of like you can fudge your way through a lot of things, but sword swallowing, and not everybody physically can do it. It's kind of like a split. Like, your body just has to be set up for it to begin with, and your brain has to go along with that, and those two things need to come in line. It just would seem to me like the ultimate skill to have, you know, and it was just sort of like, everybody can learn fire eating, everybody can actually learn to walk on broken glass, everybody can...
Is that true? Can everybody?
Pretty much.
Really? Wow.
If you're willing, yeah.
But sword swallowing...
Sword swallowing takes a level, that's next level dedication. I think it's been today, as a matter of fact, you catch me today, I had my stage debut 10 years ago today as the Lady Eye.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. Yeah. I know, in a couple of years she gets a bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
I really should throw her a bat mitzvah.
That's it for this transmission. If you like this show and want to hear more, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you're feeling truly generous, you can rate it and or write a review to let me know what you like, don't like, or even just how you're feeling today. I want to know it all. Lady Eye's event at the Morbid Anatomy is this Wednesday, September 30th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at morbidanatomymuseum.org, and you can email info@morbidanatomymuseum.org with any questions. The current exhibition is still Opus Hypnagogia. I still don't know if I'm saying that right, but if you haven't been to see it, I highly recommend it. Of course, there are some great things in store for October, including a children's Halloween party and a Day of the Dead party. Speaking of which, in addition to regular episodes on Morbid Anatomy events, I'm thinking of releasing some shorts in keeping with general creepery, but also extending beyond the walls of the museum proper. The first of these will be Dia de los Muertos themed, so stay tuned. Today's last words come from the mysterious dancer, courtesan, and spy, Mata Hari, who said, "Everything is an illusion."